It's just my honour, actually, to my thanks to David Levy for suggesting this fascinating subject. A lot of people have very weird ideas about what Olam Haba is or what Gehinnom is, and unfortunately it's because of the non-Jewish influences which give us some strange ideas. Well, yesterday was Shavuos, and if I connect up yesterday with today's topic of Olam Haba, yesterday we said Yizkor, to remember the Neshamas who are in Olam Haba. And why is it that we do something on Yom Tov which might seem rather sad? You know, you're remembering your dear ones and you might feel very despondent. Why is it that in the middle of the Simchas Yom Tov we are doing a Yizkor? And Reb Matisyahu Solomon once explained, he says, the people in Olam Haba, they can't do the mitzvahs anymore. Only we can do mitzvahs. And they cannot enjoy the Simchas HaChag. And when we are in the middle of our Simchas HaChag and we are celebrating Yom Tov, what we can do is, it's like when you're sending presents to somebody far away, like food parcels, to your son in yeshiva who hasn't got that food there, so you're sending food parcels. And when we're doing the Yizkor in Yom Tov, it's like sending food parcels so that we're sending that Simchas Yom Tov, that the Neshamas should be able to enjoy the Yom Tov just like we are enjoying it. So there are lots of questions, of course, about Olam Haba. Who gets it? What happens when one's there? Why isn't it mentioned in the Torah? Now, lots of chazals about Olam Haba. And like the other subjects we've been discussing, this is something I just know nothing about. And as we say in the Gemara in Brachas, Daf Lamed Dalet Omud Beis, Rabbi Yochanan, Kol HaNaviim Kulon Lo Nisnabu Elohim Mos HaMashiach. Whenever the prophets told us about what will happen in the future, they told us about Yemos HaMashiach. Avol Olam Haba. But when it came to the subject of Olam Haba, Ayin Aroso, Elokim Zulosecho, nobody's seen it. Nobody knows about it. I haven't been there to tell you about what happens there, so it's very difficult to give a shiur about the subject. However, nevertheless, we are given various things from Divrei Chazal, from the Zohar, which give us an idea of what goes on in Olam Haba. But what we do know is, in order to get the schar of Olam Haba, to get the reward of Olam Haba, tzorich ogam lasos achonos ba'olam hazeh, a person has to prepare in this world. Rabbi Yaakov says, Olam Hazeh Domeh L'Puzda B'fnei Olam Haba. We're like on a corridor, on a journey, and he says, Yofesh Sho'achas B'tshuva Ma'asim Tovim B'Olam Hazeh Mikol Chai Olam Haba. It's better to be able to spend just 1 hour on Teshuva and Ma'asim Tovim in this world than Kol Chai Olam Haba, because once one is there, one is unable to do Teshuva, and one is unable to chap, as it were, these mitzvahs. That is to say, one Rav once said that if people in Olam Haba would have the chance to come back here just for 1 hour, they would run straight to the Beis HaMedrash and be learning, because although they're learning there, they're not getting the schar for it. And here, the schar is so great, and they understand how great that schar, that reward is. And we know this from Perkei Avos, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Zayin, Yud Zayin, that one bit of time in Olam Hazeh is greater than all Chai Olam Haba. But at the same time, Yofesh Sho'as Shal Kolos Ruach Olam Haba. But the great pleasure of being in Olam Haba is so great that is greater than all the tanugim, all the enjoyments and pleasures of Olam Hazeh throughout one's lifetime, which one might experience in this world. Now we know that Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba. It says everybody has a chelek in Olam Haba. So the Chofetz Chaim asks the question, although this Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi says that everybody has a chelek Olam Haba, what does that mean? A Rosha doesn't get Olam Haba. It means that everybody's got a portion set aside and reserved for them in Olam Haba, that everyone's got the potential to get Olam Haba, even though one might not necessarily deserve it in the end. And there are strange things written about who gets Olam Haba, who doesn't get Olam Haba. Tovshep or Ofelim and Gehinnom, I don't know if there are any doctors here, but it's not very nice for a doctor to be told that the best ones of his profession goes to Gehinnom, and the reasons are given that some doctors only work for the money, or they don't give enough correct treatment when they could give better attention. They're not careful enough. And there are very curious things said by Chazal about who gets Olam Haba. Rabbi Yochanan says, Shaloshim minochei Olam Haba. There are three who inherit Olam Haba. Eilu hei, Hadar be'eretz Yisrael. A person who lives in the land of Israel. Now we go. Now we know why you're going, Julia. A person who lives in the land of Israel. He's zokah to Olam Haba. Hamad Yadol Bonov L'Talmud Torah, a person who brings up his children with Talmud Torah, and thirdly, rather curiously, Hamavdil al Hayayin b'Motzei Shabbosos, one who makes Havdalah over wine on Motzei Shabbos. It's Gemara and Shabbos Kuf Yud Gimel. What does that mean? Somebody who makes Havdalah, very nice, somebody who makes Havdalah over wine, but how do you compare that with someone who's living in Eretz Yisrael, somebody who brings up his children to Talmud Torah? Chazal were picking on something which seems relatively small. We can answer that there are a number of issues here, that when you are preparing for Havdalah, because Havdalah you can make over a cup of coffee and Chama Medina if you've got nothing else, but because you are preparing your wine, especially you're reserving your wine from Shabbos, that you're not going to drink it all up, and that you're reserving it for afterwards, shows that you are planning ahead and that you're doing it L'Shem Shemaim, and that you're not drinking your wine simply because you enjoy it, but you are using it for a divine purpose. In addition, that Chazal Tiknu Al Hayayin, that when you reserve the Havdalah wine for its purpose, you are listening to the Divrei Chazal, and that is a great thing for which one is Zocheh La'olam Haba. So there are various reasons one can give, but you get these quotes and it makes you stop and wonder, why did Chazal say this? Anyway, the Rambam in Perek Ches Hilchas Teshuvah gives us an eye-opener as to what Olam Habo actually is. He says something which is hidden for the tzaddikim in Olam Habo, as it says in the Pasuk, L'man Yitzav Loch Barach Do Yomim.
It's noisy.
We know from Chazal, the man yitzav loch means the olam shikulo tov, in the where it's all goodness, varachta yomim la olam shikulo oruch, where it is an indefinite kind of life, and this is what olam habo is. And the Rambam goes on to examine in that chapter what olam habo is, and he says, ein do guf gevir al nefashos hatzadikim. There is no physical matter there. It is the souls of the righteous, without any guf, just like the Malachei Hashores. There is no food, there is no drink, and all the other things which a body enjoys in this world does not exist. Elo tzadikim yoshevim v'atroseyem b'rosheyem v'nenim v'ziv hashchino. They are benefiting from being close to Hashem's divine presence. The ultimate joy which the neshama gets is being close to the Shechina. And conversely, the punishment that the Rasha gets is feeling desert, like being on a desert island or in a midbar where there's nothing and it's all desolate, being far away from the Shekhinah. And that is the worst punishment that the Rasha can get. And that is the greatest possible reward that a person can get. And then the Rambam in Halacha Vav of that chapter says, don't have these funny ideas as to what Olam Habo is, what the Goyim are saying. Well, we won't give any further silly jokes, but he does talk about certain other religions. He says, don't think that it's eating and drinking and these various worldly pleasures with silver and gold, which they think is in Olam Habo. It's all a load of rubbish. It's all hevel. That has nothing to do with what Olam Habo is. Hatovah Gedolah, the greatest thing is, Shetiyah Bo HaNefesh Bo Olam Habo. And we cannot understand in this world, we cannot conceive what this really is, what this means. Because any things we can understand in this world are to do with physical pleasure. So when we're going to talk about things in Olam Haba, and we will be discussing in a few minutes what one sees in Olam Haba, it's really b'derech mashal. It's a way that we can try and understand, because we have to speak in physical terms. As David HaMelech said, how great is the goodness which you have hidden for those who fear you, because it's hidden. And then the Rambam quotes this thing, what we said before about what the Nevi'im predicted. The Nevi'im, the prophets, could not tell to us what we're going to get in Olam Haba. Now the question really is, why is it the Torah doesn't really talk about Olam Haba? And the Kli Yochor, which was kindly referred to me by Gershon Hepner, gives a number of reasons which he assembles from the Rishonim as to why the Torah doesn't really talk to us about Olam Haba, except in hints. In the Chukosai Teilechu, we learned a couple of weeks ago about the beauties and the rewards which one gets, but it's speaking in materialistic terms about the rainfall and the crops and the harvest. But there are hints, and on the Pasuk V'hissalachti B'sochachem, and I will walk within you, is a remez to Olam Haba. And the Kli Yochor says there the reasons why the Torah doesn't explicitly mention Olam Haba. Number one, he quotes the Rambam, because the Rambam is saying that you should not regard Olam Haba as your main reward. But in these things relating to the rainfall and goodness, you are being told about the bad things which Hashem will prevent happening. But the real reward is not mentioned in order that we do things lishma. You do the mitzvahs because Hashem told you to. You don't do the mitzvahs because of the reward that you're going to get. So you're not really told about the rewards. His reason number two is based on the Ibn Ezra in Ha'azinu, that most people wouldn't simply understand what Olam Haba is if they're told about it. And the Torah is speaking to the general population, and therefore it remains hidden. Another reason given from the Rabbeinu Bechaya and the Ramban is that when he talks about the rain and the produce, the truth is that these things are above nature. Because although rain we think of as nature, the timing of it is given to you as a reward when you are good and when you're so on and so forth. So that is above nature. Whereas Olam Haba is the natural order of events. It's something which does consequentially follow. Another reason he quotes from the Ran in Bereishis and also in the Kuzri, Maimar Aleph, Kuf Dalet, is to address the cynics, the people who are mocking us. And these people are mocking us, they can't understand anything about the spiritual rewards. So we talk about the rain and other things where results are seen. And if we just rely on Olam Haba about the Ruchnius, the cynics will remain cynics and they will never be convinced. Then he quotes the Sajagon in Sefer Munos and also the Moron Avuchim in Chelek Gimel, that before Matan Torah many of us were steeped in idolatry, in Avodah Zorah, and then in those days we were praying to the sun or praying to the rain, and so Hashem gives us the idea that he is the one who is sending the sun and the rain and the goodness, and we need something tangible to understand and to see in order to have this transition from before Matan Torah to after Matan Torah to convince us. But just talking about the spiritual rewards of Olam Haba would not convince us. It won't change our mentality. He further quotes the Kuzari at the end of Maamar Aleph and the Ran, that there is a Kal V'Chomer here, and all the more so. We can understand the material pursuits and rewards. And if we can get those, then all the more so we will be able to make a Kal V'Chomer on. Because if we're close to the Shechina in Olam Haba, it will be a Kal V'Chomer from Olam Hazeh, because Hashem is saying, I'll be close to you in Olam Hazeh. So Kal V'Chomer, when the materialism is out of the picture, then we will be getting the great rewards afterwards. And his seventh reason is quoting from the Ramban in Akev, that the Olam Haba applies differently to each and every individual. When we're talking about rain and produce, we're talking to the community, about community benefits. But when it's Olam Haba, you know, it's how you honour your parents, how you give tzedakah, that you don't put somebody to shame in public. So these are individualistic things which are determined upon your own performance. And that is why the Torah doesn't speak generally about Olam Haba. And the Kudush HaSlevi says something similar in Acharei Mos. We're not doing it to get a reward, we're doing it bishmo. And so a person who learns halachas every day is called a Ben Olam Haba. Al tikri halichos el halachos, it brings it from a posuk. So the Tzitz Eliezer writes, what is the difference between somebody who got a chelek in Olam Haba and somebody who is a Ben Olam Haba? So he says in Chelek Yudei Sadi Gimel that there is a big difference. If you have a chelek in Olam Haba, it doesn't mean you're actually going to get it. You're talking about buying a plot in Olam Haba. That means working for it. And a Ben Olam Haba is somebody who learns halachas every day, and the Tzitz Eliezer questions this phrase, Muvtach lo shu Ben Olam Haba. It's a promise that he will get Olam Haba. He says in Chelek Yotes at the very beginning in Siman Aleph, this is a guarantee that you're going to get Olam Haba, because once you are learning halachas every day, you become steeped in your Yiddishkeit. And therefore, you will be appreciating it much more and carrying it out much more. And so Chazal give various ideas in various places about people who get Olam Haba, people who don't. Somebody who gets very angry won't get it, or somebody who puts someone to shame in public won't get it. Somebody who is very haughty and proud, or who's constantly talking Lashon Hara, a person involved in theft, a person involved in the Arroyos, somebody who divorces himself from Talmud Torah, and those who are saved from Gehenna, Mother Talmud Chachomim, and those who learn Torah, those who give a chizuk to Torah, those who are unable to learn Torah, but provide support to those who can, somebody who loves Tochachos, who carries out good deeds, somebody who has lots of guests, who wears tefillah regularly and wearing tzitzis and is particular about the Shema and the tefillah, and who governs with kavanah and who gives lots of tzedakah. The list is something I don't want to make now into a shopping list, because we're not going to dwell in detail on this. But interesting enough, somebody who has a wicked wife is guaranteed olam haba, because he's living a life of misery in this world. I'll quote you the source if you like. Eruvin mem aleph omad beis. Misha ishna mosheles alav, a person whose wife is dominant over him, ain't a rope and a ginnim. He will never see Gehinnom. Midrash Tanchuma Pasha shoved him. Because if a person is suffering in this world, then he's sure that he will get olam haba in the next. There's a very interesting Rashi I've come across in Bereishis, Perek Lamed Tes, Posuk Yud, possibly one of the shortest Rashis in the whole Torah, where he just writes five letters, Le'olam Haba, Lamed Ayin Vav Hei Beis, as an abbreviation. And Rashi is always going for pshat. So although we're going to be discussing the mystics and a bit of the Zohar, which will make it nice and interesting, Rashi always dwells on pshat.
Simple meaning.
You know, there's remez, hints, there's drush and drosha, and there's sod, the mystical. But Rashi always concentrates on giving a pshat in the posuk. And there's this Rashi on the story of Yosef, where the wife of Potiphar tries to tempt Yosef to do sin. And there he resists her. And the posuk there says,
Lishkav etzlo lihayos imo.
Perek Lamates, posuk Yud. And Rashi brings a chazal, wasn't even to have fully intimate relations, but just to lie next to him. Lihayos imo, to be with him, to be with her, sorry. So the question is obvious.
If the posuk says, Lishkav etzlo,
have to say the words lios imo, to be with her. It's like tautology, it's like repeating itself. What is the purpose of the words lios imo? So Rashi there says le'olam haba, in a simple abbreviation of five letters, le'olam haba. What is this Rashi saying? Rashi is saying what was going on in Yosef HaTzadik's mind when he is resisting the temptation of Potiphar's wife. He foresaw that if he should succumb to temptation, then not only will he be clinging to her now, but she will be clinging to him in the next world. In Gehinnom, in fact, there is a gematria given there by the Baal HaTurim, Latoch Gehinnom, which is the same as the Yosima, or similar to the Yosima. And that because he had this terrifying thought, he thought to himself, oh no, if she's clinging to me in the afterlife, oy vey, das felt mir, I can't bear the thought of it. And that was enough to put him off from doing the Avera Ba'olam Hazeh. An amazing Rashi in just those five letters. And so now we're going to enter a bit of the world of the mystics. We're going to venture a bit into the Zohar. The Zohar in Vayechi, Aleph Reishus Ches, says that when a person is about to leave this world and is about to enter the next world, the neshamas of his relations are coming to greet him. They're coming to fetch him, to bring him into the pleasures of Olam Haba. Rav Shimon asked Rav Yitzchok, when Rav Yitzchok was very, very ill, he said to him, have you seen your father today or not? Because when a person leaves the world, the relatives come for him to accompany the soul to resting place, and he said, no, I've not seen my father. He said, okay, that's a good sign. That means you're going to get better. And it's very interesting for me on a personal level, because the last time I visited my grandmother, she was calling her mother. She was calling mummy, mummy. And I thought, how strange, you know, all right, maybe she's lost her marbles a bit or whatever. But I found it very peculiar that although she had become forgetful earlier on, a year or two earlier, this was the first time she was talking about her mother. And I found it very odd and very spooky. And then I came across this Zohar. And another thing which struck me very personally was the last 2 days of my father's life. My father's a Zichrono Livracha, as some of you will remember. When he was in hospital, it was in the middle of the week, and he was saying to me, what are you doing here? It's Shabbos today. I said, Daddy, what are you talking about? It's not Shabbos. We're in the middle of the week. I think it was Thursday when he said this to me. It was a Thursday morning. I said, it's not Shabbos, it's Thursday. And he was reluctant to put on tefillin, because he thought it was Shabbos. He was convinced it was Shabbos. And he was saying the same again to me Friday morning. And Friday night, he was niftar. And when I told this to Rav Chaim Halpern, he said to me, Shabbos is my Ein Olam Haba. when the neshama is about to depart, it feels like it's Shabbos, because the neshama is already feeling the Olam Haba. And that is reflected in the way that the person is behaving when he's on his deathbed. And the Zayin Vayechi, Reshut Zayin, says that already 30 days before a person departs this world, the neshama is already preparing itself for Olam Haba. And the Zohar there says that the Shekhinah reveals itself to the neshama just before the neshama is departing from this world. Also the Zayin Vayechi. And the Pikkud, Rabbi Elazar says in Perek Kaf Dalet, that one sees the Shekhinah just the moment before one leaves this world, and one has this enormous desire to cling to it. It's hard to say, but when my father's Tzias Neshama took place, he was smiling. I don't understand these things, but the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar says that the Neshama has a great delight. The person has a great delight at the time when he's parting this world, because he is feeling the Shekhinah. And that is the pleasure which one gets in Olam HaZeh, in Olam HaBa, which we cannot understand and we cannot define in this world. And that Shekhinah clings to that person, if he is a tzaddik, continuously. And only if the person is a rasha, then the Shekhinah afterwards departs from that neshama. And so the Vilna Gaon says in Aderes Eliyahu and Bereishis Yud Ches, that that tzaddik will then have the Shekhinah clinging to him for always from that moment. And if Rachmana Litzlan, children pass away in this world, the children get this, the Shekhinah clinging to them as they depart. Whatever their history, the children have the Shekhinah clinging to them and it doesn't leave them. So says the Midrash Sochetov. And the Midrash in Chaye Sora Samach Beis says that at that moment of the being lifter, a person already gets a glimpse of the ultimate reward that a person is getting for all their mitzvahs, even though they're still to experience it properly afterwards. And when that person has been lifter, the Malachi Hashores, the angels, announce to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, such and such a person has left the world and is now coming before you. And this is the Gemara in Ksuvos, Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph. And there are seven gates, the Zohar says in Lech Lecha, Pei Aleph, which the Neshama goes through before it gets to the complete Olam HaEmes. The first gate is going through the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, where the Avos and Odom Arishon are buried. And Odom Arishon announces, Ponu Mokom Shalom Ba'echo, welcome! And the Avos welcome the Tzaddik who is coming on the way to Olam Haba. And then the second gate that a person goes through is called the Gan Eden HaTachton. I didn't mention it before, but there is a Machlokes Rishonim as to whether Gan Eden and Olam Haba are the same thing. According to the Rambam, it's all the same thing. The Ravads and the Ramban suggest that Gan Eden is a different phase to Olam Haba, which may come afterwards. But for purposes of the Rambam, it's all the same and it's synonymous. Then there are two kinds of Gan Eden. There's the Gan Eden HaTachton, which is on this world, and there's Gan Eden or Elyon. And then the person comes through the Gan Eden HaTachton and is greeted by the four angels, Michael, Gabriel, Uriel, and Raphael. And they make up for this person a kind of spiritual garment to wear, made up from the mitzvahs that that person has performed in this world. And so they're removing from him the materialistic garments with which he was dressed, and they put on him a spiritual garment. And he is then purified from any of the sins which he had done. And then they announce that he is ready for the Gan Eden or Elyon, and this is also in the Zohar and Vayechi, and the person ascends a kind of ladder to the third gate. And after ascending this ladder, he comes to the Yerushalayim Shalmalo, the holy city Jerusalem, which is in the spiritual world, in the Beis HaMikdash Shalmalo and the Mizbeach Shalmalo. And he experiences going through and visiting this Beis HaMikdash and the Mizbeach. And at that moment, the Neshama starts praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then from that phase, the angel Michael accompanies the Neshama through the fourth gate, right up through the other gates, up to the seventh gate. And the person is then Ne'ne Meziv HaShchino, in what's called Aspaklaria HaMe'ira, in some really shining, shining light, which is impossible to describe in material terms. And the Groin Mishlei says in Yud Tes Zayin, that once one has been fully purified from any averus one has done, one remains in Gan Eden. And one begins to realize that everything one has done in Olam HaZeh how great the reward is, even for the tiniest of mitzvahs, for the smallest mitzvahs one does, how great the reward is, and we just cannot appreciate that in Olam Hazeh. And that is why just 1 hour in Olam Hazeh is more valuable for us, because of what we can do just in that 1 hour than anything we can do in Olam Hazeh, in anything we can do in Olam Habo. And the Shevet Musa writes, the greatest tarnug one has is just realizing how much benefit one gets from all those mitzvahs which one did in the Olam Hazeh world. Anyway, when one gets to this seventh gate, one is greeted by 600,000 angels, Malachei HaShores. And this is the Yalkut Shimoni in Bereishis Mesh Mem Zayin. And each of them are shining a very great light. And then they clothe the person additionally with the Anane Kavod, and they place upon the tzaddik's head two different crowns made of gold and various precious stones. Speaking, of course, B'derech Moshel, because it's the only way we can understand it in this physical world. And they put 8 hadassim into the hand of the person. And they say to him, the verse from Koheles, Perek Tes, Leich Echo B'simcha Lachmacho, go now and eat and enjoy the bread, the fruits of your labor. And then they bring the neshama to Nachalei Moim, lots of rivers which are flowing, where a person sees 800 beautiful trees. And each has a chuppah on it, specially put there in the tzaddik's honor. And there are rivers flowing from these chuppahs, 4 different rivers, one of milk, one of wine, one of afarsimon, which is either translated as balsam or peach, and honey. And over each chuppah there is a vine made of gold. And 60 angels are standing above it and saying, Leich echo b'simcha dvash, or sapta b'torah shenim shlo b'dvash, k'dvash. Go now and enjoy the honey. The Torah is compared to the honey which you are learning, as we know from Tehillim, Yotes, umesukim b'dvash.
What is the form that
deserves parallel
to Gan Eden in
Bereishis? Ah, Eid Yalem in Oretz. Could be, I don't know, but I can show you my source where I got this from later. And then a person sees 80,000 trees, all beautiful trees, the smallest has the finest besomim on them. And the 600,000 angels start singing, praising the tzaddik for his achievements in his life. And the Eitz HaChaim is standing in the middle. And underneath these trees are sitting wise men who are explaining the secrets of Torah. Because really, well, however much we learn Torah now, you will understand its deeper secrets most in Olam Habo. The only disadvantage being, though, that once you're there, you're not being rewarded for it, but you're enjoying it. And each tzaddik there is benefiting from 310 worlds, as we say in the last Mishnah of Uktzin, V'anchel Oa Vayesh. Reb Matisyahu Solomon once quoted in a Hesped a story from the Ramban. The Ramban once had a very shining pupil, a most wonderful pupil, but he fell very ill. He was only 18 years old. And sadly, this pupil was dying. And the Ramban was very, very devoted to this pupil. And he said to him, you're going to pass away, you're going to go to the Olam HaEmes, and this is what I think you're going to see. And he started describing to him all these different lights and ladders and corridors and trees, part of which we've been discussing now. And he said to him, this is what I think you're going to see. And when you are there, and after you've seen it, I want you to appear to me in a dream. And I'd like you to answer to me 2 questions. Number 1, tell me if I was right as to what you're going to see. I'm very curious to know. So please, if you could appear to me in a dream and let me know. And secondly, I'd like you to appear to me and tell me, why is it that such a young, promising person such as you, with such great potential in life, is being taken away from such a young age? Tell me why. I want to know the answer. And soon, this young man passed away, and sure enough, the young man appeared to him in a dream. He said, Rebbe, you asked me to come back to you in a dream. I'm here. And the Ramban said to him, Nu, was I right? He said, yes, Rebbe, you were right. Everything that you described to me as to what I was going to see, I saw. It's amazing. So the Ramban said to him, my second question. What about my second question? and he said, Rebbe, everything here is so clear, there was no point in asking. Had I asked, I would have put you, my Rebbe, to shame, because everything here is so obvious, so clear, and so understandable, there was no point in asking. And Chazal tell us, Yosh kana alomo b'sho achas, a person can acquire his own abor just by saying Yehei Shemei Rabba Mavorach L'olam Lomei Omai. If it's done with the right kavana, the right perception and the right feeling, a person can get olam abor in such an easy and simple way. And it's a good deal. That doesn't mean a person should think, oh well, I'll just do now and have do everything what I want to do and do all the averis I want to do and I'll just say Yehei Shemei Rabba. It doesn't work that way. One has to be sincere, one has to show a genuine sincerity. And I'm going to end off with a Gemara in Tanis, Daf Kafes Omud Aleph. And there the Gemara in Tanis talks about a story about a Rav Broka who goes into the marketplace and he asks his colleagues, how can we identify here in the marketplace those people who are Zoche La'olam Habo? And who does he meet? He meets Eliyahu HaNavi, whom he had met before, so he recognized him. They're like old pals. Oh, hello Elijah, how are you? And he asked Eliyahu HaNavi to identify those people in the marketplace who are Zoche La'olam Habo. And the answer that he got was very surprising. Eliyahu HaNavi pointed out to him a couple of people over there. There were two phases. He pointed out a couple of people over there who were not dressed Jewish at all. One was tying up his sandals and he was wearing shoes which were the style the goyim were wearing and not what the Jews were wearing. And the Jews in the marketplace were displaying their tzitzis, and this fellow wasn't displaying his tzitzis. So Rav Broka ran up to this fellow who Eliyahu had identified, and this fellow ran away. He said, excuse me, can I ask you a few questions? I'm doing a survey for marketing research. He ran off. But the following day he was back in the marketplace again, and Rav Broka recognized him. So he came up to him and said, tell me something, please, answer me a question. Who are you? What do you do for a living? He said, I'm a guard in the non-Jewish prison. And I've got amongst the inmates, there are Jewish men and women there. And I try and make sure they have a decent lifestyle there. And I try and keep the men and women separate so that they don't come to any temptations. And if the non-Jewish guards try to harm them, they try to rape the women, then I do whatever I can to save them. I risk my life. He was giving women red wine to use as a disguise when men were starting on them, as if they were unfit and incapable of doing the things that the men wanted to do. And he was helping the women in the prison. And he said, I have to dress like the non-Jewish guards in order to camouflage myself. If they all know that I'm Jewish, then they won't let me have this duty of looking after them, and that's why I dress up the way I do. This is a man who is Zoche La'olam Habo, said Eliyahu HaNavi. And then Eliyahu HaNavi pointed to two other people in the marketplace who also looked very simple, very poshut. But he went up to them and he said to them, oh, who are you, what do you do? They said, oh, we're just plain simple poshut yidden, pintle yid. Yeah, but what do you do in your lives that give yourselves a purpose? Ah, we are very joyful people. We try to make other people happy. We go around telling jokes. Because if we cheer people up, it gives them a greater enthusiasm to carry on their lifestyle as Jewish people. It gives them more bitachon and trust in God in their lives. We go and break up quarrels. That's all we do. These people are Zoche La'olam Habo. What lesson do we learn out of this Gemara? There must be numerous other examples of people who are Zoche L'chai Olam Habo, who are not Rosh Yeshiva, they're not Mashkiachs in Yeshiva, but they are Zoche L'Olam Habo. What is it about them? Let's not be fooled by the externalities and the chitzonius that people shroud in themselves. If they're wearing big black hats and having long beards, that might be very, very nice if it gives them the feeling of being part of something, and it gives them a feeling of self-respect, and it gives them a feeling of avodas Hashem. Who knows, it may influence them nicely. But what really matters is what's inside ourselves, the panemius of a person. And just recently, somebody from the Stavazil area sent me an invitation to a wedding, and I phoned him up with my delight, Mazel Tov, and he sounded a bit despondent. I said, what's the matter? He said, well, it wasn't a proper shidduch. They met casually, and he's just been out the Israeli army, and he's a good boy. fantastic. So I said, what are you worried about? I said, these people are fighting for Klal Yisrael. Did you know that if Chas V'Shalom they lose their lives, they go straight to Olam Haba? And he told me how medactic he was in keeping his mitzvahs proper. And I said, why are you being fooled by the sort of kippah a person wears? What colour it is? That's not what God judges us by when we go to Olam Haba. And he says, it's funny you mention that, because I took him into one of our shtiebels. And he says, I can't daven here, they're all schmoozing. This is ridiculous. This is not Beis HaKnesses. And he was so embarrassed about it. The truth of the matter is that we have falsified value judgments, and we mustn't let ourselves be deterred by them. That what really matters is our sincerity in Avodas Hashem, and the way we relate to Hashem, and the way we relate between each other, Bein Odom LaChavero. And if a person is giving a Daf Yomi Shir and wearing a big black hat, but selling tray for chickens, and this is what has happened recently, then that person can't expect to get to Olam Haba. It's a very important lesson for us all. So we can say Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek Olam Haba, and we should all be Zocher to Olam Haba, but we have to earn our keep in getting there, and there are many, many different ways of doing it. We should try all those different ways.